This talk is offered by Ordinary Mind Zendo. Ordinary Mind was founded by Barry Magid, Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck, and is dedicated to her vision of a psychologically minded Zen practice adapted to the needs of American students practicing in the context of their everyday lives. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
I want to offer a few words in honor of the memory of my friend and colleague, Jeremy Safran, who was brutally murdered by an intruder in his home earlier this week. It was a sudden loss that shocked people all around the world, and words of condolence, sadness have come in all week from many, many people. Some of you may be familiar with Jeremy's work through the book he edited on psychoanalysis and Buddhism, An Unfolding Dialogue. I believe that came out in 2003, after many, many years of preparation. He had asked me to contribute a chapter to that, and that chapter formed the basis for my first book, Ordinary Mind. And it took Jeremy so long to herd all the contributors together in his edited volume, but by the time it appeared, I had expanded my chapter into a book and had it published already. So that's sort of how things happen in the publishing world. But I was very grateful for him for the impetus to write that. He was naturally a connector of bringing people of very divergent views together, and that book was the product of that attempt to create dialogue between analysts and Buddhist practitioners. But he did that in many other spheres as well. He particularly building bridges between people involved in clinical therapeutic work and those involved in doing research, those who were involved in psychodynamic therapy and those who did cognitive behavioral therapy. He was really able to speak to a great number of different people in their own on their own terms and bring them together. He's very open-minded, and it was a real talent for dialogue. It's quite special. After something like this happens, we may naturally ask what our practice tells us about how to face such a loss. We might even wonder what would our practice offer us if we, like Jeremy, were faced with a murderous intruder. How would we handle ourselves? What good would our practice be to us in that moment? For the rest of us, it's a question of how do we understand such an event? How do we process such a loss? Death befell Jeremy in a sudden and unexpected way without any opportunity to prepare or to control the situation. I also had experience of loss befelling my wife Deborah when her plane crashed out of the sky, 1994. Something suddenly, inexplicably, randomly just happens. And in the aftermath of her death, I remember talking to Joko and saying to her that the one thing I never wanted to hear coming out of her mouth was how this death made sense in some bigger plan or was some part of the Dharma or anything like that. This practice must mean we're prepared to face the full reality of chance in our lives, of change in our lives, of the complete lack of control we sometimes have over life and death. Joko was very fond of the image of the unmoored rowboat. You know, the story, the parable, if you're in a rowboat gently going along in the lake, you know, rowing, and because you're in a rowboat, you're facing backwards from the direction you're going in. And after going along smoothly for a while, all of a sudden, you know, you bang into something. And your first reaction is to curse and so say, "Who ran into me?" And then you turn around and you see that another rowboat has gotten untied from a dock and has just been drifting through the lake. There's nobody in it. There's nobody to blame, nobody to get angry at. And Joko always used to like to tell that story of how when you see suddenly that the rowboat is empty, where's your anger go? Where's all the protest go? Right? This just happened. So in one sense, a knife-wielding intruder, a plane falling out of the sky, a genetic mutation suddenly turning cancerous, all empty rowboats, things that completely out of our control have bumped into us. And there's so much of our practice that involves simply being able to accept or acknowledge that reality. I think it's important to say that that's not the only perspective we can take on such things. It's not that we have to feel that practice makes us passive or helpless in the face of what befalls us. We can take agency in trying to prevent crime. We can take agency in learning about airline safety or cancer research. There are all sorts of ways in which we can mobilize our attention and our efforts and our resources to not feel helpless. And yet, at the end of the day, there's always a dimension where we simply have to be able to accept that there are going to be great aspects of life, the most crucial ones, that are completely out of our control. Almost inevitably, we come to practice wanting to escape that realization. We want practice to give us a kind of equanimity or sense of self-control that will protect us no matter what happens. Socrates claimed that a good man cannot be harmed, even as the Athenians were unjustly putting him to death. He said, this too is an opportunity for me to teach philosophy, to show what I've learned, to practice what I preach. And I think that many of us have a fantasy that practice or philosophy offers this place of freedom from whatever will befall us. Yet even if we think that Socrates was not harmed by being put to death, there's no escaping that a small child is harmed by the loss of a parent, or the community is harmed by the loss of a friend and teacher like Jeremy. There's nothing we can do or practice or realize that will make us impervious to that kind of loss. And I'm not sure that we should aspire to that. It would be almost inhuman. In our discussion group later today, we'll talk about the koan, Seijo, and her soul are separated. And in the commentary to that koan, Mumon exhorts his monks, saying that they must solve the great dilemma of life and death. And if they don't, when they come to die, they'll be like a crab flailing all its legs as it's about to be plunged into a pot of boiling water. What will you do then, he says. What is your practice supposed to teach you about that moment? What will you do when you realize that death and the boiling water are inescapable?